Hello and welcome along to the Retro Asylum podcast. This is Bite Size number 10. Got me, Matt, on the mic at the moment, and I'm joined with Steve Erickson.
Hello.
And we've got Sam Dyer back on the show. Mr. Sid, how are you doing, Sam?
Hello. Very well, thank you.
Good, good. Good to hear you back on the show at last. But Sam's on to talk about his new book, the NES book, which we'll come on to a bit later on. But first of all, we're going to have a little general catch-up. Steve, let us know what's going on. You got broadband yet?
Well, sort of. I'm getting fibre next week. I won't go into the full details. I had absolute murder with BT. They basically told me they were going to upgrade me, then didn't, then told me there was no notes on the account, and it was murder, absolute murder. But in the end, fibre's coming next week. I'm rejoining the human race as of next week.
Welcome back. Welcome back aboard the world. Excellent. That's good news, really, isn't it? You've been living in the dark ages for quite a while now.
Yeah, man. I've been essentially my broadband has been, well, my internet has been teletext. That's the equivalent. It's been like watching like specky loading screens instead of the internet.
Go back to the digitizer days of teletext.
Yeah, waiting for the page to come around and then trying to find the hold button, which is like blue or green or something on your remote. But yeah, so I've got my broadband, and the other thing I've been up to is, you might have seen on our little chats, is building my bar top arcade.
Looking very nice. I think you need to post this on the forum as well, Steve.
Yes,
looking tidy.
Yeah, I'm really pleased with it, to be honest. I've got the kit through. Quick shout out to Rich's Bar Top Arcade again. He's the guy who provided it. Check him out on eBay and Facebook. It turned up lovely. All the panels are really, really machine cut, really nice. But I've spent a day just sort of vinyl wrapping all the different parts to it, which that's just hard work. It's really not easy sticking stickers, giant stickers onto wood.
It's a proper craft thing to be doing, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. You think it's, I just, the first piece, I just sort of lay it, I lay the sticker down on a table and then just stuck the wood on top of it. And then it's like, yeah, that's fine. Turned it over, full of bubbles. God.
Is it like putting a screen protector on your phone?
Yes.
But worse.
But instead of like, you know, 5.5 inches, it's like 2 foot.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
But I've got there in the end. And I've like, I'm 75% of the way through the build now. I reckon I'll have it done by tomorrow.
I mean, I've got to admit, I am impressed with what I saw. I wasn't expecting to have all the controls in there. It's looking white and nice. It looks like the form of an arcade cab. I'm actually really jealous. I'll come on to what I'm doing in a bit, but I'm really, not jealous, envious of what you've got.
Same thing, isn't it, Matt?
Pretty much. But it's looking really nice. Are you keeping this one? You're not going to flog it on?
Well, this is the thing, you see, because I've now, as I've mentioned in previous podcasts, I've now got my house. Because every time I've bought stuff in the past, I've always been at the back of my mind thinking, yeah, but you need your deposit for your house. You need to save up. You can't just sit with a room full of retro gaming goodness and not have enough money for a deposit for a house. You're going to have to sacrifice stuff, which is what I've done. But now I've got the house. I've got the retro gaming room. There is no reason to get rid of stuff. So this is my cab now. This is it. And also, you know, Dean laying down the Renegade Challenge the other day.
Yeah.
What was this? I didn't hear about this.
Okay, so let's just bring Sam up to speed. Dean's a bastard. That's what this is. So Dean basically like posts a picture up of him, his top score on Renegade, and I think it was like 70,000 something, brother. And a few of us jumped on, and me and Matt basically went, yeah, easy do that, easy. Had a go, can't get past the first boss. Can't get past the first minute of the game. And you the same, weren't you, Matt?
Oh no, it's Mads, not me.
Was it Mads?
I've not even tried yet. But I am going to try.
I apologise. It's me and Mads. Mads. Well, Mads has posted the same thing as me on the chat. He said I can't get past the first boss, and I was like, I can do this, and it's absolutely infuriating. I can't do it. So I think it's because Dean's got the cab and I haven't.
That's going to be the golden nugget for you getting good on it.
That's the trick now. I've got the cab on it, so this is why you can do it. It's nothing to do with skill. It's the fact that he thinks he's on an arcade machine and we're not. So, you know, bring it on.
Yeah, because like Sam, are you feeling inclined to have a go now? Is Renegade just not your cuppa?
No, it's not really my cuppa. I'd love to make one of these bar tops though that you guys are doing. I think
it doesn't look that hard, mate. If you check out Dean's YouTube clip, it's actually very doable for the non DIY person. I know, Steve, you're not exactly a handy Andy, are you? I don't think.
No, not particularly.
Same accent.
Same accent. But yeah, I'm not. I mean, I did build the last one, the full size one, a few years back, but that was mainly my brother doing all the work. And I think you're right, anyone can do it. And it's just a case of take your time. Because today it was a case of like, there's no instructions with it. You just got a load of pieces. And so it's a case of like, where, you know, where does this piece go? Where does that piece go? Make sure it matches on both sides. But yeah, it's totally doable. And the end result, as you've seen, the end result really is something nice to have in your gaming room.
Yeah, I think I'm still jealous in a way, even though I'm going to come. I will come on to what I'm doing at the moment, which will give me what I want in terms of control. But yeah, wicked stuff. That's looking tidy. Sam, what have you been doing? Anything other than books, or is your life just family and books and family and books?
Yeah, pretty much. We had a holiday last week, so we were down in Weymouth. On the south coast of England, for those who don't know where Weymouth is. Lovely seaside town. Went down there for a week and just to relax. And telling Steve earlier, checked out some of the arcades.
No rubbish down there?
Couple of Sega rallies, as you'd expect. I think one of them had a cab of, what's it called? The PlayStation 1 light gun game, Point Break.
Yes, Point Blank.
Yeah. Point Blank. And then I think there was a football game, was it called Striker or something? I can't remember what it was called, but there was a few, but nothing really. As we know, I
found them really, really terrible down there. The best one's the one right down the end.
Yeah.
Right down the end of the high street, sort of almost off the beaten track a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one that had the football game in it that I can't remember the name of. But there's some really cool sort of, it's not retro gaming, but retro fruit machines down there as well, which I always like looking at as well. Like these really old fruit machines. I think they're really cool, and it's not often you see them because they're probably in skips all over the place.
yeah. So yeah, that's one thing I've never thought about looking at is the old fruit machines.
Yeah. It's I love all that sort of stuff. Like looking at the printing of the. You know, like the way they're printed and all the old graphics and stuff. It's really cool.
Nice.
I wouldn't know to spot one. I would not know the difference between a fruit machine from now and one from 20 years ago.
Yeah, one takes 50. One takes 50p. One takes 5p.
The other one takes notes.
I was brought up in a seaside town, so I remember one summer at the end, I was just about to start school again, and. I said to my mum, I said, can I have some money for a school bag? And she went, what the hell? You've just worked all summer. Where the hell's all your money gone? And it had gone in the fruit machines down the seafront. So, yeah, that's how I know how to spot old and new fruit machines. Play plenty of them.
Lovely. And then it's books all the way.
Yeah. So I think we'll probably talk about it later, but just launched another Kickstarter for a... NES/Famicom Visual Compendium. So that's just been, for those out there, anyone who has ever done a Kickstarter before, they are very time-consuming and sort of take over a little bit, but hugely exciting.
Yeah, and the Commodore book is with you, Proofs, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, I actually got, so this is the second edition of the Commodore 64 Visual Compendium. And for those that don't know, I essentially, back in 2014, produced it was 230 page Commodore 64 book, and then earlier this year decided to basically expand it and make it up to I think it ended up on 470 pages now, so adding in loads more content, loads more games, interviews and features. So now the Commodore 64 book is an absolute monster, and it's comes in hardback format as well. So yeah, I had advanced copies of that this week, so I've actually had the physical book, and I've just got to wait for it to be shipped now. So
marvellous.
Yeah, but I'm really chuffed, because as everyone knows, we are all Commodore fanboys, and that is my, you know, I do books on the Spectrum and Nintendo, but my true love is the Commodore 64. So it's a really special book, I think, and I think it does it justice now, I think.
I mean, that's where it all started for you, wasn't it? The Commodore 64 book was the start of Bitmap Books. It's what kicked you off on this journey of these beautiful books, really.
Yeah, and it was always, I always wanted to go back and revisit the C64. It's not to say that the first book was, there was anything wrong with it. It just, as soon as the Amiga book came out, which was the second book I did, it was almost twice the size, and it sort of made the, it sort of dwarfed the Commodore 64 book a little bit, and I think it deserved to be on a parallel with it, really. So I'm really chuffed that it is now.
Well, one thing you haven't mentioned there is the that you do it in two flavours as well, haven't you? You've done it as a full book with the 400-odd pages, and then you've done it as a second book for the people who own the first one, as a, like with all the extra additional content.
Yeah, do you not know that, Matt? Yeah, so this was because obviously I didn't want to alienate or annoy people who had backed me in the first Kickstarter. So you could essentially back it two ways, as sort of Steve touched on. You could get, you could buy the second edition, if you like, as which would be the same size book as the first book, if that makes sense. So you'd have two smaller books making one big book, and that would be shipped in a slipcase with a like a bit of cardboard in the void in the slipcase. And then when you'd obviously get it for the post, you'd slot your existing first edition next to it off your shelf, and then you'd have both of them next to each other. And then obviously then I've got the combined hardback, but it just meant that people didn't have to buy the book twice, which obviously wouldn't be very fair to have to make people to do that. So yeah, no, it worked out really well, and it was really, really popular solution.
Yeah, so, yeah. So that's coming soon. Brilliant stuff. Absolutely brilliant. Okay, I keep mentioning that I've been working on something. So when Dean and Steve started doing these cabs, it got me all thinking I really wanted to do one, but actually I can't afford it at the moment because I'm spending my money on things I don't really need, like music equipment and more music equipment, essentially. So I think they're needed because I'm in a midlife crisis early, but I could be buying other things with it or saving it for a rainy day. However, I haven't got that kind of money. So what I did was bought a XRK tank stick with the trackball in the middle of it, with this idea of putting a Raspberry Pi in it, adding a couple of connectors to it, so HDMI, audio out to the actual casing of the XRK. So you can just take it anywhere and plug it into any TV. I thought it'd be a nice, cheap solution, because with arcade, the cabinet's brilliant and lovely. It's all about those controls, though, isn't it? That's what really makes the arcade experience so nice and lovely, is those controls. And I'm kind of going to be getting that with the X-Arcade. I've been playing it just on the monitor so far, and I loaded up games that I'd have no interest of loading up on an emulator and a joypad. So on like Altered Beast, it just happened to be in my list of games. So I loaded it, played it, actually quite enjoyed it. Whereas I would never even consider that normally in a normal world. Do you find that with your cabs previously, Steve, that you're just loading up stuff? I mean, there's always the chance of picking something random in a main ROM set, but games that you would never normally go for just because the controls make it so real for you.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the tactile nature of it. I think with all these things, is if you go back and play something and if you go back and play a NES game on an emulator or a SNES game or whatever, or even a C64 or Amiga game, and you just play it with a PS3 controller or an Xbox controller or something, it's just, you're just playing it. But when you hold the correct controller in your hand, it's like there's a physical memory as well. So it doubles up. It's not just the nostalgia kick in of like what the visual side of it. It's like, this feels right now. If you play Kickoff 2, for example, holding a competition pro, it's suddenly like it all clicks together. So it's the same thing you're saying there with the controls.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just that arcade. Well, I guess the arcade thing's a whole massive nostalgia trip of going into those arcades when we're younger. But do you know what? I've got RetroPie running on this Raspberry Pi, and you know how good it is on your Raspberry Pi 3.
Yeah.
On the Raspberry Pi 2, it's still pretty damn good. I've been using Final Burn Alpha for the main ROM sets, and I've got things up to the year 2000, like 1944, working absolutely perfectly on it. And it's just stunning, this 20 quid bit of kit. Not only that, it's got Doom and Quake 3 all built into that RetroPie, hasn't it? And Quake 3 runs like an absolute dream on it. Doom, perfect. So I'm sitting here wondering why people... I could get castrated for this next comment, and I probably will by all the purists. But, you know, we like to play games here on Retro Asylum, don't we? So
Play it, don't display it.
Exactly.
Play it, don't display it.
But just playing Quake Arena on this little Raspberry Pi and a mouse just felt absolutely brilliant. And I'm thinking, why do you want to go and try and emulate old consoles like Jaguar for Doom or whatever the best version of Doom was, when you can just do it on this little bit of kit here, and it's absolutely brilliant. So I'm mega impressed. I've now got to start modifying the X-Arcade tank stick. I don't think it's going to need a lot. It's got a fair bit of space inside, and being a little motherboard, the Raspberry Pi will fit in nicely. It's just those connectors will be the hardest bit of it for my skill set. But I'm over the moon with it. Still want a cab, but I'm over the moon with it nonetheless. I'll still remain jealous, Steve.
No, but you're right about the Pi. It's a great bit of kit. I know people have said the same thing in the past. It's like they're not convinced with it. It's not powerful enough. I know Dean had a few issues with his when he had a Raspberry Pi 2. But I think not only has the 3 come out, but the software's upgraded itself. You know, it's evolved to the point where it's just flawless, you know. And it's such a tiny piece of kit. You're quite gobsmacked at how it's just a little bit bigger than a credit card.
It's fantastic.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. And like, I'm tempted to get another one and make a little tiny box and bang it on the back of me 50-inch plasma in the living room, and then just have a controller coming out. So if I want a gaming blast of any of my retro stuff, I can just do it from on my telly as well in the living room.
Yeah, that would be nice. If I've got to modify the case in any way to get this Raspberry Pi in, I will go for the 3. I'll buy myself a 3 and hook that in there just so it's nicely done and I know I'm getting the best experience possible. But yeah, and I didn't pay much, thanks to my brother. I didn't pay much for the tank stick at all, so it's cost me £60 in total, really. Nice. I got the Raspberry Pi for Christmas, so it's peanuts. Peanuts in the grand scheme of things. I've actually been playing some games. I've been playing Retro City Rampage on the 3DS. I don't know whether either of you have seen this, but it's just a wicked GTA kind of clone, which doesn't take itself seriously at all. There's loads of retro references in their games and posters while you go around the city. There's a crazy taxi mission to do on there, so you go and pick up folk and take them places and run people over, and you get tipped for running people over in this one, whereas the original Crazy Taxi, I think people left the taxi, didn't they, if you started banging into people. But it's a really good little game. I think it's out on the Vita as well.
Well, I tested it on the PS3 about a year ago, maybe a bit longer. I loved it. It's so many nods to so many different games. I love the fact, I don't know if on the versions you play, but you can change all the graphic settings.
Yeah, you can do that.
You can pick everything, like C64, NES, old PC. Really clever.
Yeah, it's a nice little game. I wrote it off initially because it has so many buttons to remember, and I don't like all that. It's kind of a 6-button thing, but you get used to it quite quickly, and it's really... And I love the missions in it. One of the missions is you're on fire, and you've got to go and make... You've got to go and touch people to get them on fire and burn as many people as possible. And that's just sadistically brilliant, in my opinion. Fantastic. Fantastic. Steve, something about a £3 1200 Amiga here. This will make people grind their teeth and punch the podcast app, I think. Tell us.
So I entered essentially it is a raffle, on the Facebook group Commodore for Sale. Every now and then they have this raffle. It's like £2 or £3. It was £3 to enter. They have 60 people enter, and it's usually a Commodore, like a nice boxed Commodore 64 or blah blah blah. And I've done them a couple of times, and this one came up the other day in work, and it was an Amiga 1200 in lovely condition. Bunch of games with it, a GoTek drive in it, a USB stick in it as well, full of games, hard drive for the Amiga. And a second disc drive. I thought, I'll just give it a go every now and then. It's £3, forget about it. Did it. And then got an email off the bloke like that evening just saying, congratulations, you've won. And I was literally gobsmacked. I was like, what?
Makes my blood boil.
Yeah. So received it yesterday or the day before. And it's great condition. I'm going to do a little bit of retro brightening on it. It just needed a little bit of yellowing on it. Nothing bad like. But yeah, absolutely can't believe my luck. So £3.
Beautiful.
That's also for the gaming room and something else that I can now keep.
Lovely. Steve, you've got Sam, you've got a 1200, haven't you?
I have. It's underneath my telly.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, it's supporting your TV.
It's quite. I always like when we get people come round saying, "What's that underneath the telly?" It's an Amiga 1200.
Let me show you. Let me show you this.
Yeah,
I've
got a mate
history.
Who I actually went to school with, and we spent many a evening or whatever, playing sensible soccer. So he occasionally comes round and we have a few beers and a pizza and get sensible soccer out in the front room.
Nice.
But yeah, it's just there. I like it to be close by.
Mm. There's something about having one of those set up, because I know you sold yours, Steve, didn't you? So this is a real touch for you to get another one.
I'm really lucky to have landed it again. Like I said before, most of my good stuff got sold because I was just trying to get money together for this deposit. So it was back on the list of things to now get to keep. So landing one for £3, it's tremendous.
Stunning. Stunning, yeah. Really. I know that one of our listeners and forum members, I don't know whether I'm saying this right, Lakitu, Mark, anyway, guy's name's called Mark, runs a watch repair business, but he's always got a 1200 set up, or so he did a little while back, played sensible soccer when he's on a little break from repairing watches.
Nice. Yeah,
that's cool to have that set up.
Yeah.
Lovely.
That is really cool.
Nice one, Steve. Good work.
Excellent. Good work. Thank you.
Good work. So have we got any updates on the C64, the new C64 on the Spectrum next? So the C64 one, we spoke about it, I believe, on the last podcast. My memory is that bad, I don't know. They've come out with a statement, haven't they, I think, since then? Or has it just been kind of static? I think mentioning about a Raspberry Pi inside it rather than actually going for a full solution.
Yeah, I think that's what we mentioned last time. I mean, Sam, I thought it'd be good to mention it because... So, you know, we're basically the three Commodore fans. So I thought I'd get Sam's opinion on it as well. What do you think of the 64, Sam?
I must admit, I personally wouldn't have any use for it because I've got a Commodore 64 with a tape deck and one of those SD card things. If I want to play it, I'll do it that way. I just personally would have no use for this. And I've got a JXD with Commodore 64 games on it. So I wouldn't want the handheld thing. It's obviously a very pretty looking thing, but I just think the way I game, it just wouldn't suit me.
You're a purist.
Yeah, I'm a bit. Yeah, it goes back to what you guys talk about at the start. You know, you just can't play I suppose playing a Commodore 64 and a JXD is a bit of an odd one, but when I can, I like to play the real thing. And actually, half the thing I enjoy more than playing the actual game is... you know, loading it out, getting the cassettes out, looking at the inlay, watching it load and all that sort of stuff. And you just don't get that, do you, when you use emulators?
No. What are your thoughts on the... Oh, sorry, go on.
Matt. No, I was just going to say, that's a real valid point around the loading stuff. It used to frustrate us way back when, but now it's just part of the experience. If you really want to sit down and experience it, and I like what you said there about getting the inlay out and checking out the artwork and the instructions and so on. I think that's a real...
That musty smell of the old cassette in there is lovely.
I'm wondering if it's going to load after 5 minutes of waiting. I remember Forbidden Forest... one of those old Commodore 64 games that just sat on the blue screen all the way until it loaded. And on my tape deck, it was always something like 149 tape counts, which was a country mile, wasn't it? It was like 15 minutes of loading, and you just never knew. And if it went at the end, error or whatever it was, you'd just be so disappointed.
Man, that game used to scare the crap out of me. Is that the one at the start with the tree with the flickering lights when the logo appears in the branches?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether that was the first or the second one, the Forbidden Forest. But, I mean, for a blocky, I think we're going digressing here, but for a blocky graphical game, the atmosphere was just out as well. And you're right, as a kid, it's scary, but it creates, even now, just an eeriness to it. It's done so well. Paul Norman did such a great job on that game.
Well, also, he did everything, didn't he? He did the music, the coding, and the graphics.
The music's really, really nice as well.
There's some really good remixes actually out there. We are going off on a tangent now, but there's some brilliant remixes of Forbidden Forest and Beyond the Forbidden Forest out there on YouTube and stuff. Really good.
So it's not for you then, Sam?
No, not really. But I mean, obviously, it hasn't been hugely popular. One of the things I've been massively surprised about is that there's only 435 people have, you know, got behind it. I must admit, I mean, it's not for me, but I would have thought there'd be a hell of a lot of people out there that it would be that would go mad for this.
Yeah, I think we covered it on the previous podcast. I think the downfall was the Spectrum Next to some degree. It's turned us Commodore hard heads into Spectrum lovers, because it's just being done so brilliantly well. I love the idea of the 64 still. I think that case is a lovely looking bit of kit. Yeah. So I'm still interested in it. But that Spectrum next. Well, certainly got Steve under the barrel, and I'm definitely going to be buying one as long as it delivers what it promises, which I think it's going to. I think there's too much honesty behind the guys developing it, isn't there?
The next, you mean now?
The next. What did I say? Sorry.
Yeah. No, I thought you didn't know what you're talking about. Yeah. The 64. Yeah. The next just looks fabulous, and I think it is partly that's what killed the 64, like you just said, and I think also the failed Jaguar one.
Yeah, I think that's more of a bigger factor, Steve. If I'm honest, I think this launched about 2 or 3 weeks after the Coleco Chameleon, didn't it?
Yeah,
people are burnt.
And they haven't, you know, I mean, I've got nothing against the guys doing the 64, but I think from my experience of running Kickstarters and stuff, you just be completely straight down the middle, be as honest as you can. And I'm not saying they're being dishonest, but they're not...
Vague.
Yeah, exactly. They've been vague and not really answering questions, how they've been asked, you know, skirting around us, answering certain things. And I think all it does is just adds more... to things, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's the issue of no prototype as well. That's just massive to me. That's like,
you
show us something. Show us something. Because this is why they've been burned by the Chameleon problem. Because it was like, the Chameleon took a lot of people's goodwill and burned it. Yeah. And this time around, people have gone, well, hang on a minute. Where's your prototype? I want to see this thing. I want to see it working. I want to see what it does. I want to see someone holding it, turning it on, telling me what's inside it. You know, and then I'll think about putting some money towards it. And that's the problem. It's like the Spectrum Next is the total opposite. It's like you can, like I've said this before, but you can literally watch YouTube videos of the hardware, you know, before they even built the case. And it's like, there it is. I know it's coming because I've seen it myself.
So actually the biggest thing now is that case going to look as beautiful as what it does on the renders? Because exactly. We know the hardware's going to work because we've seen it. And that's a great thing. But is that case going to live up to it? I really hope it does. I hope it's got a quality feel to it and it feels... not a cheap bit of plastic. It will be a cheap bit of plastic ultimately, but it needs to just have that solidity about
it.
Pick it up, it doesn't creak and crack and feel a bit like it's going to fall apart in the next few years.
But... Well, I'd say the other thing about the Next guys as well is that they're really doing it for the love of it. They're really, I mean, they're trying to get the price down, you know what I mean? It's like when they said they wanted to get it below £100, I was like, don't. Get it?
Yeah.
For 130 or 140, because I want you guys to make a profit, because I want you guys to make something else afterwards. You know what I mean?
It'll go absolutely bananas on Kickstarter, that will.
Yeah, I think they will absolutely smash it, because like you're right there, Sam, but like all the other specky stuff has nailed it. Like each time, we've said this before, but the Vega and everything else is like through the roof. So I think the Next is just going to take it to the next level.
I mean, I actually can't wait for the Spectrum Next to launch, and I'll be there day one backing it. And I can't remember the last time I felt like that about Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Or any crowdfunding. I really want one, but not because I want one necessarily, but because I want to be part of it, and I want to support them in what they're doing, because it's so amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a really, that's what they've bought to the whole thing, isn't it? They've been honest. They've got a presence. They launched it at a retro show. I mean, that's balls on the line, isn't it, really?
Integrity.
That's,
it brought absolutely. Serious and integrity with it. So
the interview here on Retro Asylum, if you haven't listened to it, go and check it out, because it's so honest. There's passion, and you just know it's going to happen. Yeah. And you know what? I'd rather they didn't launch at 99, kept the quality a little bit higher, and went for that sort of 139, 149 price mark. Yeah. Obviously, it's not my decision, and great if they do get it lower because of my pockets and everyone else's pockets. But I think we all want a quality product nowadays.
Yeah.
100%. You know, us retro folk now, we're not really in it for the bargain anymore, so don't try and make it a bargain. Make it quality, make it last.
I think the most exciting thing about it is they're making something new. They're making like a different Spectrum as well, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we've already chatted about this like on so many podcasts, but still excited, still want one.
Just unofficial sponsors of the Spectrum Next, Asylum.
just on the Specky, just an added little bit of bonus news here for listeners. This might be really old, but I only just discovered it in Google Chrome. there's a little plugin which enables specky loading bars when your page is when your internet page is loading.
Brilliant.
So when the BBC website is loading up, the bars come up the side, like the raster bars, and they actually animate as well.
That's so good.
It is really cool.
I'm getting that in work.
It's actually really annoying after about 5 minutes, but
I want that in work as well.
I'll just get it in work, it'll confuse the hell out of people.
But it is brilliant seeing like a really like modern website with like these bars at the side.
So. I believe there's a plugin as well with an Amiga emulator built in.
Is there?
Yeah, I think there's some sort of technology in the back end of Chrome now which allows stuff like that to be really simple. There's a Spectrum emulator as well.
Ooh, nice.
So I think I'm just looking for that. Those colours now, I can't find it at the moment, so I'll try and do that during the show and get it into the show notes, because that sounds like a really cool little add-on.
Hi, this is Lauren Lanning from Oddworld Inhabitants, and you're listening to Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show.
I don't suppose you have a copy of Automania by Chris Hinsley. It is rather old. It's by Chris Hinsley.
No luck, Dad. Never mind. There's still a few more to try.
Good old Retro Asylum. We don't just help with the nasty things in life, like a blown power supply. We're there for the nice things too. You do? Oh, that's wonderful. Can you keep it for me? My name? Oh, yes. It's Chris Hinsley.
Right, should we go on to the main event? Sam, we want to talk to you about the NES book. So,
okay.
Launched on Kickstarter just about a week ago. It smashed the target in, 4 hours? Something like that?
Yeah, it was really quick.
It was quick. It was probably, I think it was the quickest. The Amiga was pretty damn quick prior to that, but this was just stunning. Every time you refreshed the page, it was just incrementing up really, really quickly. And you're currently on 125,000, aren't you? And this is Friday night, Friday the 10th of June, and you're at 125K, which is just, well done. So I know you wanted to do this for a while. Steve, I'm going to hand over to you, because otherwise I'm going to be putting words into Sam's mouth half the time, I think.
Well, I think you're involved with the book yourself, aren't you, Matt, for the photography? So, you know, I think I'll come around to you in a minute as well and ask us a few questions about that. But so exactly where's the Kickstarter up to now, Sam? Where are we up to?
So as Matt said, it launched last Wednesday. And what I normally do with the books on Kickstarter is sort of start them off as a modest page count. So I think I started this one off as about 250 pages, something like that.
Yeah.
And each book comes with like a dust cover as standard and all that sort of stuff. And basically the way I've done it is that the stretch goals, every time a goal is hit, it basically pimps the book up a little bit. So every $5,000 or every couple of grand, it might add 16 pages. Or I think one of the ones I did was adding metallic inks to the book.
Nice.
And then another one was adding some bookmark ribbons. And then one of the things I'm doing in this book as well is using gatefold pages. So the idea that both pages could sort of fold out to double their size. So
you I know what you mean. Yeah. So it's an additional width.
Yeah. So you could have basically like, if you can imagine the first level of Mario, it's like a game map spread out across four pages.
Nice.
That would look really cool. It's basically just gone for all the stretch goals, and it's up to now, as you say, it's been going for about 10 days, and the book is up to, I think about 430 pages, something around there.
Wow.
There's about 5 sets of gatefold pages added. We've added the metallic inks. We've added the ribbons. Every backer also gets a Discun sticker, and he was like the little mascot for the Famicom disc system, little yellow sort of blob character thing, like a little vinyl sort of sticker. And one of the goals that was activated at 70,000 was that every backer gets a Nez Chiptune album.
Nice.
And this is something which I've tried to do with all the Kickstarters I do, that you also get like a soundtrack, if you like, with it. And it's not just a soundtrack that's bought off the shelf, it's actually made specifically for the campaign. So Matt will know all about this, but we did a Shadow of the Beast remix album with the Amiga book. And then Alistair Brimble has done a Spectrum remix album with the Speccy book, and C64 one with the C64 book. And this time I've used, been working with a chiptune artist called Chibi Tech. And she's living in Japan, and she's amazing chiptune artist, very, very modern, contemporary, but got that real sort of like NES Famicom sort of vibe to her music. So she's making a 10-track album.
Wow, brilliant.
Which that's already been hit, so everyone's getting that. So it's really cool, because I think everyone can see, I mean, yeah, it's raised a lot of money, but I think everyone can see that obviously they're getting a lot more for their initial pledge, which is really the beauty of Kickstarter, which is why I really like it, because it just snowballs and you get more and more and more. Another one which actually was only just hit tonight was that each book's going to come in a slipcase now. It's like a heavy board slipcase. I think the next big stretch goal after this is I managed to get in touch with quite a famous box artist. So a guy called Mark Erickson. He did
good
quite
name.
A lot of... Yeah.
Good name.
No relation, is it, Steve?
Yeah, probably not.
And he did Tetris, loads of games, Strider. He did Mega Man 2, which is famously quite bad, but it's very iconic. He did quite a few SNK games, all on the NES, all the SNK ports sort of thing. But anyway, he's got a massive portfolio of NES games, and he's going to illustrate the inside of the dust cover, and he's going to actually create like a bespoke image, you know, like a collection of some of his box art, and it's going to feel like a piece of NES box art, basically.
Nice, but really
I
nice.
Think that's 135,000. And then one of the big ones, which I can't remember exactly where it is in the stretch goals, but it'll turn the front of the slipcase lenticular. For those that don't know what lenticular is, I don't know if you remember the best way of describing it, those rulers you used to have when you're at school. So with the sort of the grooves down the plastic, and you move them and the image changes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So if you can imagine on the front of the slipcase, you've got like a little image of Mario or like Link. When you move the slipcase, he'll like Mario will jump, or Link will like wave his sword or something. So just trying to think of little things like that, that just like little fun ideas that make the end product better. Mm. And people seem to be really, you know, digging the ideas and stuff. So yeah, that's kind of where it's at.
It's like what I said about the Spectrum Next with Pete. We're not in it for a bargain anymore. Us, you know, the real retro folk. You know, I'm not doubting the casual retro, but you know, the people who want to collect and want to have something good quality will pay that bit extra. And yeah, your books and all these Kickstarters that are retro related seem to prove, don't they?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think people. I probably attract a certain kind of person, I guess, like you say, Matt, that wants nice, like collector's things, if you like,
yeah.
You know, hardback books that they're going to properly, you know, keep on a shelf and, you know, have on display. Definitely.
Superb.
Excellent. Nintendo. Sorry, Steve, I was just going to come in with a question.
No, go for it.
Are you a NES fan?
Is this something
out of your comfort zone? No, you like the NES.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's not my favourite system, you know. But I've always loved the NES. And growing up, I had a handful of friends who had one, and I used to play a lot of them. And I always wanted one, but there was no chance because the games were 50 quid or whatever, and it was always the rich kids who had them. But I've always had a soft spot for the graphics, and obviously that's the theme for my books. That it's the books are all about games that have got great graphics, and I always think they are quite sort of Commodore 64 like the NES graphics. Obviously, there's a bit more colour going on, but you know, I'm doing a series of books, visual compendiums. You can't ignore, you know, systems such as the NES because, or the Famicom, because they just had such a huge impact on, you know, gaming generally. So it's important to cover them. And yeah, it's going to be more of a challenge, I think, researching. I'm going to learn a lot on the way, but I think I've got a pretty good sort of like grounding around, you know, which games to cover and all that sort of stuff. So I'm sort of looking forward to it, really, because I am going to learn some stuff on the way as well.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you always seem to manage to dig up some really great people to interview in these books. Is there anyone, I know you've got the girl for the music, but have you got anyone special lined up for this one?
Well, this is where this book's going to be really tricky, but because the book isn't endorsed by Nintendo, you can't speak to current employees of Nintendo, because obviously a lot of the guys who did like Mario, for instance, still work there. So I'm going to have to rely on speaking to a lot of American and European and UK based developers, and I'm going to be able to include some Japanese contributions, but they're going to be from existing interviews that already exist online.
Okay.
So you can basically credit the interview as a source. So that's the only way to do it, really. Because I don't want the book to be too UK-centric, because obviously the NES wasn't that big over here, so it wouldn't be that relevant. It needs to have a huge American slant and a Japanese slant to it as well.
Well, that's something I was going to ask you, because it's obviously smashed through the Kickstarter already. Do you know if that majority of those backers are American? Do you know if that's where it's coming from?
I've got a pretty strong idea based on the time that they're coming. Normally what happens is I go to bed and then I wake up in the morning and I've had quite a few more backers. That would lead me to think that, yeah, I'd probably say 50% are American so far. But as far as people that are involved, that we've got involved so far, so Damian McFerrin, who is the is a content director for Nintendo Life, he's working with me on like generating copy and interviewing people. And we're interviewing Kevin Bayliss from Rare. He was their first, I think I'm right in saying, he was their first employee, and he basically learned to do graphics off Tim Stamper. And his first game, one of his first games, was Battletoads. So he's obviously like a sort of key guy for the NES, but, you know, very UK-centric. Then I'm also speaking to Greg Mails, who worked at Rare for years. We're also going to be speaking to Jazz Rignall, who everyone knows, he launched Meme Machines magazine, which was huge over here, wasn't it? And then, as usual, Steve Jarrett's going to be involved because he launched Total magazine, which is obviously very NES-centric as well. And his partner in crime in that magazine, Andy Dyer, will also be involved. Damien's also going to speak to David Darling from Codemasters, which is, I think it's really interesting, this, because the whole story behind the Game Genie was quite an interesting one. Because obviously
controversial, wasn't it?
Yeah, Nintendo obviously didn't like it because it hacked the code. But then Sega ended up embracing it, didn't they, on the Mega Drive and stuff. But, so that'd be good. They obviously, they were quite, once they're prolific, they did quite a lot on games on the NES, Codemasters. And we're also speaking to Steve and John Pickford. And I've managed to find a couple of American guys. So a guy called Scott Pelland, who was editor of Nintendo Power magazine. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Nintendo Power, but it, essentially, I think it started off as Nintendo's internal, I think it was like an internal sort of magazine.
Yes,
or like a fanzine or something. And it grew into a proper publication, and it only stopped going a few years ago, I think, or it might even still be going in some form.
I think it was documented in that Console Wars book how it had grown from the internal to proper magazine.
Yeah. So speaking of Scott, which would be fascinating, there, And then, yeah, there's a few other guys. I've got Brian Fargo from Interplay. And I'm hoping the list is going to grow as well as the sort of, you know, as I sort of dig deeper, if you like, into who's around.
How do you find chopping down, because obviously your books are very graphical and not too wordy, but chopping down your discussions or emails or however you gather all this information from the people, how do you chop that down into something that's quite succinct and befitting into the books? It must be so hard to edit out such good stuff.
I don't know. Yeah, it sounds like it'll be hard. I actually don't find that part that difficult. I mean, you get the occasional one where it's really tricky, but if it's really tricky, I'll just send it to Steve and sort of ask him to help, because that's obviously his area of expertise. But on the whole, because it's only 100 words snippet, you can pretty much get, you know, and you've just got to be a bit ruthless and just edit things out. If it doesn't add to it, then just keep on chopping, and you get something which is quite succinct. So it's not as daunting as it sort of sounds, really.
So I was going to touch on this, and we did mention this in the other episode, but Matt, you did the photography, didn't you, for the sexy console shots?
Do you know what? I'm feeling a bit distant on this one, because it's the first one I've had no other input into. So, Sam, you need to cut me in a bit more. No, I'm joking. But, yeah,
tell us a bit about, you know, making that, you know, the grey box look sexy.
Yeah, it's bloody difficult in all honesty. I mean, the Famicom, brilliant. It's like a sexy model that you've got, every angle's perfect for photography. But a grey square box has been flattened a bit with a cartridge slot on it. It's hard to get excited about it, and it's hard to get a good picture. And the photos that have appeared in the Kickstarter campaign, certainly the NES, are not going to be the final photo, so I think there's a lot more to come from it. In fact, I've been quite slightly inspired by some of the other stuff in the Kickstarter campaign, like the technical drawings and such like, and those sort of, you've got those artworks in there as well, haven't you, Steve, of the NES, which,
you mean which bits, Matt? Do you mean the fan art?
Yeah, I'm not sure what you call it. So the isometrical artwork on there, and the Icon is Born page, where you've got the NES and you've got a cartridge.
So the
technical drawings.
The blueprint style sort of drawing, yeah.
That's it, yeah. And, you know, that the angle of that has kind of inspired me a little bit. So, yeah, the photography of the NES specifically won't be final yet. But we've got more to come, haven't we, Sam? We've got, is it all right to say what else is going to be featured?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so we've got the Rob the Robot.
Yay.
That's going to be difficult because of backgrounds, but I think that's going to be a good, fun thing to do. We've got the light gun as well, and obviously a ton of cartridges that we can take photos of and maybe include in there somewhere. So it's going to be, actually, it's probably going to be one of the more interesting ones overall, but just that big chunk of plastic that's square is really, really difficult. But I shall do my best. I shall do my best to make it look in any way sexy at all. But my approach to it's the same as always. It's just put them somewhere and move them around, taking photos of every angle. I've kind of taken to sending Sam the majority of my pictures, especially when I'm not convinced of them, so he can be the one that makes the cut on the final ones, because every one of them's got something half decent about them. So I think it's really for his eye to be the final decider. Whereas with the Amiga and the C64, I was a little bit more picky about what I sent him across. But and seeing the Famicom in the flesh was quite a sight. I don't think I'd even seen one in a magazine before, to be honest.
So small, isn't it? It's like a little toy.
It's small, and that's another thing. We've got the keyboard and the disk drive to show off yet as well. But I love those little docks for the controls. Absolutely genius design choice, that was. Real genius design choice.
Yeah, I mean, I never even knew that the Famicom had like a basic keyboard. It actually comes with a tape drive as well, so you can save your any coding you're doing on it.
Right.
But the keyboard's quite a cool looking thing as well, isn't it, Matt? The sort of colour scheme and stuff.
It all matches beautifully, and yes, it's a very interesting looking console. I can only assume they dumbed it down for the Americas market and for the Europe market, because I don't know. I think that'll look better coming over here as the Famicom. Personally, is the Famicom exactly the same as the NES internally?
Yeah,
internally. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah,
I've, I think I also sent you the top loader, didn't I? Which was the one after. Did I send you one of those, Matt?
Don't think so.
Oh, well, I think there is in the box somewhere. There's like a top loading there as well. So after the sort of Mark II one, which is a lot nicer than the boxy.
I better look through the box again, don't I?
Yeah, it is in there somewhere.
Yeah, there you go. So yeah, my it's the same lenses I'm using. We're keeping the same style ultimately as the rest of them. You know, I could change my camera and change the lenses, but then it'd probably lose that similar feel all the way through. So I'm happy to stick with that combo. And for anyone who wants to know, I was talking to someone at work about it. And they said, "Oh, you must have spent hundreds on that." And no, I didn't at all. The overall kit new would have been less than £500, but now you could pick up the combination of what I'm using, which I'm not going to give away my trade secrets, for probably about £150. So it's easier these days to do professional looking photography than it was many years ago, as we all know, because it's digital.
Yeah, you still need an eye for it, mate.
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's funny what you're saying there, though, about the grey Nintendo. It's like, and you're talking about the Famicom as well. It's kind of a shame that the grey box is the iconic one to most people. Mm. The grey box is what everyone remembers for an NES. And isn't that a shame when you say in there that the Famicom was such a nicer design?
Yeah.
I mean, it does Nintendo justice in a way, doesn't it? Because that Famicom design is just so Nintendo, so nicely done. And yet, yeah, the iconic one. And the controller as well, it sits a bit nice because it's rounded, whereas you've got the real square one, haven't we? But that's become like the classic controller look now, hasn't it, really? The square clunky one. There's something nice about it still, though, let's face it. Even though it's not the most beautiful looking thing in the world, because it's iconic, it's cool.
Yeah, it's got a proper 80s look to it as well. Square edges.
Yeah.
Yeah, it befitted the time, let's face it, it really did. I'm only saying it now because we're sort of 30-odd years in the future.
True. So, Sam, where just direct people then, where they can go and back this campaign?
So I've got like a short link, which is nesbook.co.uk. So nesbook.co.uk, which will take you to the Kickstarter page. Where obviously you can back it there if you would like. And there's still, I think, just under 3 weeks left of the campaign to run. So still.
Yeah, 21 days. 21 yeah. days.
Still time.
Just to hit the million mark this, Sam. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be something?
That would.
Imagine your stretch goals.
Yeah, I bet. I'd have to start trying to think outside the box, I think, a little bit.
Sam will come and write it in your house.
Handmade and all that sort of stuff.
Dragon Miyamoto in.
Superb. Well, the other thing is, Sam, just where can people go to get all your other books as well?
Yeah, so you can get all our books from my website, which is bitmapbooks.co.uk. So on there, you can pick up the Commodore 64 Visual Compendium, which will soon be superseded by the larger version, which I mentioned earlier in the show. The larger version will be coming out on the 1st of August. Circa sort of 1st of August, so if you probably best to hold on for that one, to be honest. You can get the Commodore Amiga Visual Compendium, which comes in soft cover and hardback. Same for the ZX Spectrum Visual Compendium, which I still love those neon colours in that book.
Does look great.
That's again available in soft cover and hardcover, and the hardback's basically just like a little bit more money. So if you know if money's an issue, you can just go for the soft cover, which is a little bit cheaper. And then books that I've sort of published for other authors, if you like, there's the Super Famicom Box Art Collection, which has only just sort of come out recently. Feedback on that's been really, really cool. It's basically a collection of about 250 Japanese Super Famicom games, and they've been photographed, really beautifully photographed, and each one's got like a write-up about the artwork. So you can get that, and there's also Arcade, which is a book that some people might be aware of, which is a guy called Tim Nichols, who had a collection of old arcade machine marquees. So those are the little rectangular strips that go at the top of the arcade machine that are normally backlit. He basically got a load of those from an old props company in America, and they were in terrible condition. And he scanned them and restored them all in Photoshop. And yeah, it's just incredible what he's done, restoring this artwork back to life. And the book is essentially just a collection of all of these marquees. And that's a really nice book.
Just, just want to say about that book as well, I had my two worlds collide there. I think I'll text you about it, Sam, as well. And this is just a real random thought for you, is everyone probably knows I used to, or most, a lot of people, I used to be a DJ, and I used to be sort of heavy into drum and bass and jungle. And so I follow a lot of different DJs and a lot of different people on Facebook. So you've got the retro side of my life, you've got the musical side of life, then you've got my friends. And popped up on my feed was, you know, very well-known DJ in jungle, DJ Stretch, had bought The Arcade and one of your other books, Sam. And it was just this sort of juxtaposition for me. It's like, oh my God, you know, two worlds completely colliding there. So I had to go on there and say, oh, you know, here's his other books, and I've done the photography for it, because I kind of, you know.
And then the final book is called A Gremlin in the Works, which is coming out, well, this weekend, basically on Monday, officially. And that is a book by Mark Hardesty, and he's sort of quite well known throughout the retro gaming community. And he's made this amazing book. It's essentially two books. It's the history of Gremlin Graphics split into over two books, which comes housed in a like a slipcase. And it's officially endorsed by Ian Stewart, who's the founder of Gremlin Graphics, and he's obviously like overseeing all the content. He's given Mark access to all the old business cards, you know, paperwork. So it's all got all sorts of scans in there and game documents. And he's pretty much interviewed every single ex-Gremlin employee ever. Mm-hmm. And it tells the story right up until nowadays, where they're actually called Sumo Digital in Sheffield. Yes, it's a really nicely designed book. He's done a fantastic job, but it's an absolute beast. Yeah, but he's even interviewed everyone. It's like Ben Dalglish and, you know, Gremlin even bought DMA Designs, who Gary Penn's interviewed, and, you know, the guys from DMA. So it's really, 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 really cool. So that little lot's been keeping me busy.
Unsurprisingly.
Yeah.
So just as a quick little aside there to what you're saying about those books, Sam, obviously we're going off to Revival at the end of July, and we're going to host a few panels, but we're also going to be doing, I think it's a raffle for charity, for the special effects charity, for, I think it's disabled kids playing video games. That yeah. really helps them.
Yeah, it's a great charity.
It really is. And just want to say thanks to you, Sam, because you've offered the last three books that you've just mentioned as raffle prizes. So if you want to see, obviously go and buy Sam's books, but if you happen to be in Warsaw, Birmingham, at Revival, come and throw some money into the raffle, because you might get a chance to win them. And we're going to hopefully have some of them signed as well, Sam?
Yes, we are. Yes, I'll get each one signed by the author. So hopefully they'll make really nice prizes and raise some money for the great, very worthy cause.
Definitely. And like I say, thanks to you, Sam, for donating them.
That's right, no problem. No problem.
Excellent. Steve, what are you saying?
So, yeah, so Matt, do you want to walk us out of here?
Yeah, well... Thank you, Sam, for joining us on this show. It's a bite size that, as always, seems to turn into, you know, nearly an hour long, but it's been really, really interesting. Yeah, a mouthful. It's far from a snippet. But yeah, thank you for coming on. Really looking forward to the book, as always.
Thanks, Matt.
It's really interesting to hear some of the stuff. You know, I'm really looking forward to it, because I'm not a NES fan in the slightest, but just looking at your page layouts on the Kickstarter makes me want to go and play the games, which is what that book, or what the whole collection of books, is all about. I'm ultimately disappointed when I get to games when I put them on after looking them in your books, but that's not the point. It just inspires.
It doesn't show the flickering in the book, which is good for me.
But yeah, fantastic. Thank you for joining us on here. Thank you, Steve. It's good to hear you, despite of your broadband woes still, and you'll be fibre clarity next time around.
Certainly will. High definition.
So it's been Bite Size number 10. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. See you later.
Take care, guys.
Bye.
Silence.